Good morning. I guess everybody's had about as many chocolate rabbit ears as possible by now. We're going to take a different turn in London. This is, of course, on the menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
Oh, we forgot that, huh?
I just did that.
You just did that?
Yes.
But you forgot it. Oh, you were doing it differently.
We're saying, like, there's been a resurgence of French restaurants in London. There's been a resurgence of quality dining hotel restaurants in London. And there's also been a resurgence of Italian, fine dining Italian restaurants in London. And I guess there's just a lot of restaurants coming up in London.
Well, there are. I mean, the restaurant scene is
fabulous.
It's
yeah.
really fabulous. And a number of our guest chefs expressed that opinion themselves when we asked them why they're cooking in London. They said because it's just the best place to do it.
Yeah, they get all the
best
great ingredients.
Best place to get ingredients. Best place to have an appreciative dining audience.
And they have a good camaraderie, chef to chef as
right.
well.
But the world as a whole loves Italian. I think a variety of surveys around the world, decades apart, have all turned up the fact that people love Italian food best of all. And three of the finest interpreters of Italian food in London right now are a part of this program. So listen up. You'll enjoy, I feel sure, and you'll want to go taste them, I'm sure. First up, Jacob Kennedy, who is most distinctly un-Italian, as you will discover as we talk to him, nevertheless has a very Italian-sounding and a very genuinely Italian restaurant called Bocca del Lupo.
Now, the very first question I have here, Jacob Kennedy, is why do you spell Kennedy with one N?
because it's a completely made-up name. My family on my father's side are Hungarian Jews, and they went through a really horrible time in the Holocaust. They both went through concentration camps
and fled
to Ireland and hid their identity and changed their name. My dad didn't know he was Jewish until he was 16.
Really?
So, they made it up.
Oh, wow.
He used to get told off in school for misspelling it.
Really? Well, you have such an interesting background. I mean, we're sitting in your restaurant in London, Bocca del Lupo, which is Mouth of the Wolf.
The Mouth of the Wolf.
Yes, and on the wall are all these paintings by your mother, whose name is...
Heidi Becker.
Yes, who is American.
She is American originally. She grew up in Italy in the 50s.
Okay.
They had quite a glamorous life there, I think.
How did she end up in Italy?
Well, they went there. My grandmother was sick a few times with TB, and they came to Europe on a rest cure, and they just loved it. I think also at that time, coming from the States, they became very wealthy as soon as they set foot on European soil.
Uh-huh.
Because Europe was in the big post-war depression. You guys were still... laughing.
So, how the tides have turned. But so you have, and then your father was a musician?
He's a cellist. He still is. And he teaches more than performing. But.
Wow. So you have an artist mother, a cellist father, and then was reading your background. You went to Cambridge University, St. John's College, and you studied, you're a brainiac. What did you study?
I studied natural sciences, which is what all the sciences come under this kind of an umbrella uh-huh. heading. And as you go through the 3-year course, you specialize more and more. I focus more on biology and psychology, I suppose. But I think the caliber of my family has gone downhill through the generations distinctly. I'm as low as it gets, probably.
But you started early on with your interest in food. You said your grandmother was a great cook.
Well, both my grandmothers are still around. Okay. They actually cook a bit less now. And they're both great cooks. And I identify more my maternal grandmother, who comes from Baton Rouge. So she's got a great history of Cajun and Creole cooking behind her anyway. Kind of Southern Belle. And then when they were in Rome in the 50s and 60s, they learned to embrace Italian food.
So
Italian
that's your
food.
Introduction to Italian cuisine.
That's where it comes from. And I have no blood. It's all fake.
Well, first book of yours that I saw was absolutely brilliant, called The Geometry of Pasta, which is all done with shapes of pasta and line drawings. Mm-hmm. Very simple and very thorough. All my colleagues and I said, why didn't we think of that?
It wasn't supposed to be quite as thorough as it is. And in fact, I think if there's one failing now, it's that it's a bit too big and it looks almost encyclopedic. Where it looks almost as though it's meant to be thorough. And there's a lot of content that's not there. Originally it was meant to be this thin little innocent book that was a sneaky one. We push by. And of course, as you start writing and you start researching and you start looking into it, there's more and more and more recipes that have to go in there, more and more pasta shapes that are just unmissable, either because graphically how they represent themselves or because they're so important somehow in Italy. So it did grow.
This book, your latest, is
the
restaurant Bocca, and it's pretty encyclopedic in terms of regions and variety of dishes. Could I say, is it idiosyncratic? I mean, or did you resolve to represent all these dishes?
I suppose my view of Italian food is a bit idiosyncratic. That said, I don't really think there is such a thing as an Italian cuisine, apart from outside of Italy, where we have these generic Italian restaurants. And unfortunately, inside Italy now, they're starting to spread as well, this idea of a homogenised or quite generic Italian cuisine. But I think until very, very recently, there wasn't much communication between regions, or even from village to village.
This is true.
And
family
each one
to
has
family.
Family to family.
Yes.
And they're very, very proud of what they do, and the way they do something is the only way to do it, and that's how they've maintained this individuality from location to location. And trying to make it all generic, and you know, the country was formed 150 years
right.
ago. The Italian language spread in the 50s and with TV. Before that, each region had its own dialect that was actually really we have a family house in Spredlonga, which is about an hour's drive south of Rome, and I remember when I was a kid, all these really old generation.
It'll surprise you to know that we actually went there.
No.
we did.
When did you go there?
2000 something. We drove the Amalfi Coast
mm-hmm.
from Rome. And we were on our way back.
And you popped into Spellonga.
By the indirect route, and we stopped in Spellonga.
So it's a very pretty small town.
It's a beautiful town.
A big, sprawling town underneath. When they bought the house there, which was in probably 54, there wasn't a road going village at all.
Amazing.
You had to walk over the hills.
No, I remember driving. We drove up to the top of a hill and looked down over the town.
Mm-hmm.
Is that...
Well, it's on the town. Yeah, there's a hill just above it, one of the Arunchi hills, and then the town is sitting. It's on a hill itself. It's on a headland or a spit between two beaches. Anyway, the older generation there when I was growing up, they couldn't understand Romans speaking Italian. They couldn't communicate with them.
The first time I ever went to Sicily, they might have been must have been or could have been speaking Russian.
Exactly. And there's been this isolation is maintained. This amazing diversity. And that's what this restaurant is about. It's about finding these hidden gems. And that's what the book is about. It's finding these hidden gems that you have in each region. Some of which are known across Italy, some of which are known internationally, but the majority of which are not known from one town to the next. And it's that kind of dish that you find when you're traveling in Italy that really makes you excited.
So that's how you would characterize your restaurant. And I was surprised that you have such a varied menu, and you say it changes every day.
It's not the whole menu. We'll change
roughly a dish
a day or a dish every couple of days. So the whole thing will change, apart from a few classics. It will change maybe once every month or so.
You spend a great deal of time in Italy.
Not enough, but yeah, I've spent some.
You stayed a year.
I stayed a year. That was really good. It was very hard to come back from, especially a year of not working and just eating and having fun and traveling. So yeah, it was difficult to remember how to work again after that.
Well, so you would characterize this as Italian cuisine, regional, maybe, but also your own particular take on it. This is an example of that.
My favorite example of that is the recipe for caponata that's in the book.
Yeah.
And when we first opened, I had a number of Sicilian waiters working for me here. I don't know why we had so many Sicilians. They're a lot of trouble when they get together.
That's my background.
I've got to watch myself. And I asked them what they thought of the caponata, which was a really stupid thing to do. I haven't done that since then. And they all absolutely hated it, because one of them, I put celery in it, and one of them, the mother doesn't put celery in it, and that's absolutely disgusting, and I don't put peppers in it, and they thought I should put peppers in it. Each one of them had a very polarized view of how it should be, how big the vegetables should be cut up, whether it should have pine nuts or not have pine nuts, or anchovies or not anchovies. And it's just this one dish.
This is a story of my family, by the way.
There's no, you know, it would be better if you didn't have celery in it. You know, this is absolutely disgusting, because you completely screwed it up and put in, you know, it's a travesty. And it isn't. Mine's very, very delicious caponata. And it may or may not be identical to one you might find in one place in Sicily. It has.
So you work through these recipes, even though they're traditional.
You taste, you know, in caponata, I've probably tasted 100 different caponatas in Italy. I've probably cooked from a dozen or two dozen different recipes myself. And then you figure out your own way of doing it, and then that's your family's recipe from then on.
How about you have a menu in front of you? What kinds of things would you recommend that we eat from that menu, since you're looking at it?
Well, it's a difficult question for me to answer, because if I didn't like something, it wouldn't be on here. But there are a few things I'd like you to try.
Okay.
Some of them are things which are quite specifically English ingredients, which we get here rather than Italian, but are so amazing. So we've got...
So that's another characteristic. You use your good quality local ingredients, filter them through an Italian sensibility. Is that...
Exactly. Well, the sourcing policy is that I buy food from England and from Italy, basically wherever's better. It's just fresh ingredients that I source, and cheeses. Everything else we make, so salamis we make, sausages we make, anything that we can make, we'll make. And there are, anywhere you go, there will be things which are so delicious and so fresh and are worth using. So I want you to try, we've got these oysters which are just incredible. I got them in yesterday.
Now, are they from here?
They are here. They're from the southwest of England. And they're completely wild. They're harvested from the rocks, which is never happens at all. I don't think there's anywhere in the world that they don't culture them commercially rather than harvesting them completely wild.
Even in Ireland, they're cultured,
these are just incredible. And then we've got some Irish sea urchins. Which again, like gold dust. And you can get them in the Mediterranean. I think the Irish ones, they're the same. It's the same species. I think they're actually nicer to eat.
We had fabulous seafood in Ireland.
It is incredible. And then hopefully some langoustine. We'll have maybe some grilled langoustine or raw ones, and scallops from Scotland, which are just really to die for. And there is just a quality of ingredient that's very hard. It's actually hard to get here because most of what we catch goes abroad. The English, we're learning, but we still don't fully understand the value of food.
With these really?
We're learning about it as a culture, but there's a lot of things we have this amazing spider crab fishery. I nab a fair amount of the spider crab that's caught. They're like smaller versions of king crabs.
Yeah, but where is this?
That's also in the south coast, but all the catch goes straight to Spain and France.
Oh, really?
And we have to kind of wrestle them off the boats and claim some for ourselves. Similarly, fresh anchovies, we get a good run in the autumn, and they end up going straight to mainland Europe, because people here just don't know what to do with a fresh anchovy. Everyone thinks anchovies come as brown fillets that they don't like in a tin. And there are lots of things. The langoustine that we get from Scotland, from the North Sea, again, the majority of that goes to Europe. Because you're talking a product that's £40 for a big one. It's £40 a kilo wholesale. You know, that's what...
When I was in Greece a while ago, I made a special trip to this particular island because they were... that's where all the lobsters came from.
Mm-hmm.
We could not find a lobster because all of the lobsters went to Athens.
they're probably not going to Athens very much anymore.
No, that's true.
They're probably going to Russia now or somewhere.
Yeah, I guess. So, what else on this menu you want to tell?
So we'll hit some seafood. I want to give you one of my homemade salami because it's something I'm really proud of that we do.
Peter loves the silo salumi,
and it's a process that I enjoy doing so much. It's very rewarding. It's a bit like baking bread. Quite miraculous that things actually work out in the end. Always. We'll have to have some pasta. I think a couple. We'll do one of a dish of. We've got some orecchiette with nduja, a homemade nduja.
Oh, right.
Which
homemade,
is if you can take a lot of heat, because mine's spicier than the calabrese, which is saying something.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of used to spicy. That's good.
And some tortellini, which we hand make, which very few people do because it's such a labour of love. Even in Bologna now, there are very few places that still make them by hand. There are a couple which are well worth going to, but it's getting more and more mechanised over there. So that will definitely have. And then, I don't know if there's anything that really jumps out at you that you'd like to try. We have, do you know pera?
No, what is
that?
So
that's, we've got a dish from the Veneto of boiled tongue with a homemade mostarda, clementine at the moment,
which is
lovely. And pera, which is like polenta, but made from bread instead of polenta.
Really?
And bone marrow. And there's a bit of cheese, and it's quite rich. And salsa verde. So if you fancy a bit of offal, that's a good one to go for.
Yeah, I've been to Venice a number of times, but I find eating in restaurants there problematic because I don't know why, because they don't eat Venetians don't eat in restaurants and the tourists don't care?
It's
or?
Just because there are so many tourists,
yeah.
I think.
With yeah, I think that's what it is. Everything's kind of dumbed down. Tourists, why would you, if you can serve rubbish food and make money, why would you make good food?
And in fact, with most tourists, I think, especially most tourists perhaps in Venice, a lot of people will prefer what we would consider to be rubbish food. You
know, yes,
they'll
I
want
know.
Something that's familiar or something that seems typically Italian. So there's probably, I have no idea how many pizzeria there are in Venice, but there's probably quite a lot. And that's certainly not Venetian cuisine.
No. Now, let's not forget your wine program, because you have a particular interest in wine. And you have been...
Yes, I'm an alcoholic.
I have read reviews of this restaurant where they home in on your wine program and your wine list. What is your philosophy behind it, and what kinds of wines do you favor to go with your food, obviously, right?
Well, I buy the wine, which has been quite a very steep and very enjoyable learning curve for me. In general, we've got the list is, I say, medium size. It's probably about 160 bins of table wine, of red or white wine, and then quite a few desserts and sparkling bottles, which are all lovely. And they are, it's exclusively Italian. There's an issue in Italy, which is there are 20 regions, and there are about 500 grapes, more or less, depending on who you ask, because everyone's got quite a different opinion. And so it's not as standardised as the wine you see, for example, in France, by region. And I tend to, apart from the most important and renowned grapes or types of wine, I'll tend to try and choose one example that I think offers the best value to the customer. So whether it be a wine that's £15 on the list or £500 on the list, it's the one that I think offers the best punch and value for money, and I tend to try to offer one example of it only. So if they're going to have a Falanghina, we have one Falanghina that they can. There are a few exceptions, things like Suave, we've got a few Chianti, we've got a few.
Yeah, we were lucky recently. We found somebody who was publicising their wines in the United States,
yeah,
and they're making from the Sagrantino grape in Umbria.
Oh, that was wonderful wine.
We had their 25th anniversary, 100% Sagrantino,
which was a lovely grape,
which was absolutely delicious. What we didn't know when we were drinking it was that the street price in the United States is about $450.
Well, did it taste worth it?
I could drink this every night, Anne
said she thought it was one of the best wines she'd ever drunk, and when we interviewed the representative of the winery, we knew why.
But I had no idea it was in that price range or anything. I mean, it still was that good.
There are, I mean, in a way, you can get an amazing wine in a restaurant for even for as little as £20 here, whatever that would be. That would be $30, I think, and that's with a restaurant markup on it. And you can get amazing wine for £1,000, and you can. It's not just about how much you spend. It depends a lot on the winemaker and the processes he uses. I like to make sure that when people pay more for a bottle of wine, they're paying more for what's in the bottle, not for the reputation of someone who's made it.
That's good. Very good. And, you know, we shouldn't forget to mention your charming place across the street.
So that's Gelupo.
Yes.
Which is well worth visiting if you come over. It's a great place to drop in. It's an ice cream shop.
How did you get involved with gelato? I mean, with the making of it.
In my year, I spent a year in Italy, of which 6 months was in Rome and travelling from Rome around the south. And then I travelled more and more and more and more and more around. So I spent a few months in Bologna, which I really loved.
City. I mean, wonderful
and
food, huh?
While I was there, I went to work for a couple of weeks at a gelateria called Gelatauro. I'd been trying to learn how to make gelato for this whole year. It was one of the few things, most of the time I was not doing any work at all, but this was one of the few things I wanted to learn how to do. And I asked at a number of places which were very good, and they all had closed doors to me because they didn't want to give their secrets away. I have a different philosophy. But theirs was that these are their secrets. They didn't want to share them. And then a friend of mine, Faith Willinger, she introduced me to Gianni at Gelatauro, and he very kindly he took me in. And
what kinds of secrets do they have making gelato?
Well, he taught me, and he taught me his recipes. But more importantly, he taught me how to make a recipe of my own, which is what I've taken on. There's a science and there's an art to it.
Yeah, we just interviewed a woman who has made a great deal of success with ice cream flavors, and she had a few secrets. So she never uses egg yolk, for
example. Yeah, mine, almost all of my ice creams are egg-free. Yeah. And in fact, they're pretty much cream-free as well. Italian gelati are very low fat. They're higher sugar. There's a blend of different sugars. But there's a lot of work goes into making... It's a base. They call it base bianca. Or base gialla if it's got egg yolks in it. And this base is what gives you the texture of the ice cream. So you're looking for something which, in a gelato, is very dense and very, very smooth, silky. Yeah. And that acts as a foil to the flavour. And if you get it just right, you know, you taste a pistachio gelato, which will be about 10% pistachio. And it tastes more of pistachios than eating a fistful of pistachios does. You know, it's got this, it kicks this flavour right up. And if you get that right, that's what makes a really great gelato. It's this amazing texture, but it's this vehicle for flavour that pushes it to the fore. And that's what he taught me how to do, basically.
How about anybody coming here? What about a website? Do you have a website for the restaurant?
I have hundreds of websites.
I noticed that, actually. I did a search.
The restaurant has a website, which is boccadilupo.com, boccadilupo.com. Gelupo has a web. Gelupo, this isn't going to be so useful to much of your readership, but Gelupo, we have an online shop as well, which delivers ice cream around the UK.
Oh, that's good to know, yeah.
And that's quite a unique service, because we ship it on the day. We make it and ship it on the day, and it will reach you either the day or the day after it was made. So it's incredibly fresh product, which is, I think, very unique. So that's gelupo.com. And the book's got its website. I've got a website. Everyone's got websites for everyone.
Well, once again, it's Boca with two C's and Kennedy with one N.
Exactly. Everything made a bit more complicated.
Location is one of the most convenient if you're in central London, because it truly is a stone's throw from Piccadilly Circus.
Exactly. It's a funny street. This street is a very tiny street,
It's not named on one of my maps.
But
I found it, and it is a stone's throw for Piccadilly Circus. It's a busy place, but you can get seating at the counter without a reservation.
You can, and we hold a few seats. We're very, very small. Is probably our greatest asset. I love small restaurants, but it's also a challenge sometimes. So reservations can be difficult to get. We keep about 10 seats back on the counter for people who walk in.
Well, it's been just a delight.
Yes.
And now to lunch.
Yes.
And not only did the rascal cook us a wonderful lunch, or rather his kitchen cooked up a wonderful lunch, because he sat and ate with us, which is a very pleasant experience indeed. But after lunch, he took us to Gelato di Lupo.
No,
Gelupo, which is right across the street.
Gelato outside of Italy.
Yeah, tied our hands behind our back and fed us samples of 20 different of the most delicious gelato you've ever had in your whole life. And you'll want to go there too, and you should.
We had a great time.
Yeah, you just have to consume a few less calories tomorrow. There's always tomorrow.
Yes.
And in the meantime, it's time for us to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Oh, bene. Molto bene. And next we're going to yet another
I thought you were
going
to say welcome back.
Oh, well.
You're nothing if not programmed today. You're being a rebel.
I'm being a rebel.
You're changing the introduction. You're changing the welcome backs from our... it's really funny. This restaurant ought to have been familiar, even though at the time we only knew part of the familiarity. Aurelia sounds Italian. In fact, it turns out, as the chef explained, that the Via Aurelia goes all the way from Italy, all the way through southern France, and all the way across Spain. So there are tastes of France and tastes of Spain in the menu, but it's predominantly Italian. The general manager is Albanian, but worked for a number of years at a fine Italian restaurant in London where we knew him. And Rosie Yates Greenslade, who likes to be called Rosie Yates instead, probably cooked for us at a restaurant called Roca, which of all things is Japanese, back about 6 or 7 years ago. Her mentor, Nick, whose last name I've forgotten, but you'll hear it in the menu, has just announced that he's going back to New Zealand. But anyway, Lisa and Leonardo are working together, a highly successful, very enjoyable restaurant, and I'm sure you'll enjoy sharing our experience.
Well, I know about the Via Aurelia. in Rome and in Italy, because it goes through a number of different regions, which describes a little bit the scope of the menu at this restaurant we're at Aurelia, which is not in Italy, but it's in London. And we just had a lunch where, I mean, I can tell you every single dish we had was wonderful. And I need to thank our chef, who we're going to talk to first probably, and also an old friend of ours who I'll explain about that in a little bit. Let's start with, where are we in London?
Sure. We're in Cork Street in Mayfair.
Rosie, please pronounce your last name for us.
Yates.
Oh, but it's hyphenated. There's more to it.
Yates Greenslade. Just Yates is fine.
Okay, Yates. Rosie Yates.
And like the poet.
Yes, and your food is poetic. So there we go. That's a good segue. And you are a Kiwi.
I am.
But you've been in London for how long?
8 years now.
See, okay. But explain to us where this started and what the concept was. The first review I read said that the reviewer did not understand the concept. I didn't think the concept was very complicated at all. You do Italian food really well with a contemporary idiom, and it's not limited to one region. Is that correct?
Yeah, we also sort of, the Vera Aurelia carries through France and in Spain as well. So we have a little bit of that, the Spanish and the French influences coming through as well, with like the jamon ibérico and a few French dishes, the niçoise, tuna niçoise, stuff like that.
And is that why that risotto tasted like the Valencia paella done outdoors?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, it was good. Well, we ate far too much. Anyhow, what else sets this apart, this restaurant? You have two floors.
Yeah, we have two floors. We have the beautiful charcuterie bar upstairs, and where we do San Daniele. We have the beautiful old Birkel slicer. And then downstairs, when you come down to the open kitchen, we've got the charcoal grill, the charcoal rotisserie right on display, so it's really visual. You can see everything that the chefs are doing. Completely open kitchen, so you hear all the noise, all the smells, all the good, all the bad.
Well, it's very busy, and there are a lot of families here, but I think that's because of the day. It's the Mothering Day.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we don't normally have so many children.
And now, we walked in the door, and all of a sudden, there in front of me is somebody I've known for, how many years, Leonardo? Oh, yeah.
I think it's been eight years.
8 years.
Yes.
Because you were at Zafferana when we first came to London for Valentine's Day. And now you are general manager of Aurelia. And I watch you move. You're really good at what you do. Well, you like people.
This is why I do what I do. I am at my best when I am around people and surrounded by them. And I love when they enjoy and having a good time.
Now, you're from Albania, but that was a long time ago. You were in Germany briefly, and you've been in England a long time.
Yes, it's 15 years now.
And you're married to an Italian, so you're pretty well saturated with Italian culture.
Yes, I would say so, yes. Marrying a strong Italian woman, so yes, it's true.
Tell me, Rosie, how did you get so tuned into Italian cooking?
I was working at Rocca, which is Japanese, and I left there to do something different. Italian food, Spanish food is really what cooking, what I like eating and what
Rocca
I like cooking.
Rocca is wonderful. We've eaten there. It is a fabulous restaurant. But our chef is leaving, the one that we love so much.
Nick, yes. Sadly, he's heading off to New Zealand.
He's going back to New Zealand.
Yeah.
Which sounds to me like there's going to be a hot new dining scene.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to trying it.
Oh, you too. Oh. What about the menu? Could you describe what you cover in your menu?
Sure. Well, the charcuterie. So we have beautiful, we make a nice foie gras terrine, some hand-sliced jamon ibérico, cover the San Daniele, which is a beautiful, young, sweet San Daniele. So charcuterie, lots of charcuterie boards with nice homemade pickles and stuff. So that is all sliced to order.
Now, how many of those do you make yourself?
How many charcuteries?
A San Daniele comes from San Daniele, mm-hmm. which is a town in Friuli, Venezia Giulia.
Yep.
But you make some of the other things yourself.
We do. Sure. We make the pate and the terrines. We make ourselves as well. Yep.
And then there was this wonderful sausage that was cooked.
A sobrasada, yes. Uh-huh.
And you make that one too?
No, it's made in Mallorca, that sausage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. Speciality. I think things like that, if the masters know how to do it best.
I have to say something that came last, which is actually more Mediterranean and Italian, was your salad was so fabulous. It was the plain green, wintergreen salad mm-hmm. with lettuces and arugula. Where do you get the produce?
A lot of the fruit and vegetables come from England. The salad leaves are all grown in England. We do take some stuff from the Mediterranean, so from Italy. A lot of our meat and fish is caught in England. Yeah, try to be as local as possible, but there's some things that you can only get the best from the Mediterranean, so we get those over as well.
Well, we loved this lobster salad mm-hmm. with shaved fennel and preserved lemon. I love that. Also, the tuna tartare. Oh, the beef carpaccio with parmigiano, beetroot, and hazelnut. The hazelnuts are perfect with that. I mean, I've never had it with hazelnut before. That was the stroke of genius.
Thank you.
Okay, so we did the soppressata, and we did also a risotto that probably, to me, resembled the kind of paella that I got in Valencia that was cooked out of doors on a wood fire and had that smoky kind of flavoring to it. Do you do that? Is that a deliberate?
We don't cook it on the charcoal grill, no, but it is like a different, it's not a very typical traditional Italian risotto. It's slightly different. Make a beautiful bisque and cook it with a bisque. And then the raw scallops on the top.
Yeah, well, that was just beautiful. Okay, what else did we have here? We had so much, actually. I'm ready to think I will never eat again.
No, we had some, I'm just reminding you, we had some beef and some lamb. You've forgotten so soon?
Beef you're talking about.
Yeah, we had lamb, too.
I haven't got there yet, Robin.
Go ahead.
No, we had this wonderful lamb. Now, how was this lamb done? With the anchovies, the salmorio.
Yes, the lamb is actually salt marsh lamb. It's just come back into season. So
what does that mean, salt?
Salt marsh means that the lambs have grazed beside the sea on the sea vegetables that grow, so they get that nice salty flavor.
Really?
Yeah. You get it in England and in France. It's just the first week of the season this week.
And then we had the what else did we have there? Oh, there were so many things.
Oh, the rotisserie beef.
Hello, we haven't had a lot of these things. We should just... I would really be happy coming here and having one meal after another to go through the whole menu. It really was very good. Let's talk a little bit about the wine program. And I would think, Leo, you're the one who handled our wines. What is the concept behind your wine program? I mean, what is it? It's mainly Italian wines?
I would say that the wine list resembles... I would say that the wine list also resembles the path of Via Aurelia. So it does have an extensive wines from east part of Italy, the Mediterranean, and then goes down south of France and the Ligurian coast, and then goes all the way to France. So it is, you have, and also we do include an extensive wines from the islands, from Sardinia and Sicily. So it's kind of...
Oh, that's right. You have a separate section for the islands. This is wonderful. Yeah.
Yes. I think we're just creating this beautiful heart of Mediterranean and including all these beautiful wines into the wine list. And there are some gems from Tuscany, the usual ones from Bordeaux, and yes, we do go a little bit in Piemonte.
Well, but we should, as you're scooting along here, Peter started mentioning this flame-grilled beef. That was fabulous. It was prime rib of beef. But it tasted just, totally different.
Yeah. It's been slow cooked. We cooked it for about 2 hours slowly on the charcoal rotisserie. So
I see.
So it gets a nice flavor, nice smoky flavor.
And it comes with watercress, fresh watercress in Dijon. The people who come here, who actually comes here? Today is, I can't judge, because today was the special Mothering Sunday, which brought out a lot of families with a lot of children on cell phones. they text it all there. You wonder why your family dinners when you have everybody doing a smartphone and texting. But who ordinarily comes here? Probably a different crowd upstairs and downstairs.
I would say during the weekend you would see pretty much a similar crowd as we see today, very family orientated. And during the weekdays, you would see a mixture of young, vibrant people and business people. So it's a mixture. It's a mixture. But during the weekend, yes, the whole theme changes. You see more family coming in, and you know, just.
I mean, how many seats do you have?
We have about 80.
Both floors?
Both floors, yes.
I did want to mention one thing that we found very interesting and very rewarding for us, because we wanted to make sure we did something on Sunday that's related to business in as usual. And one of the great things about it really is you serve the same menu 7 days a week.
Yeah, that's right.
So it wasn't this is a special Sunday roast luncheon and we only do it on Sunday, and it's about as interesting as a roast and four vegetables can be. Here the full program is available, and of course we took advantage of that. did we not? I have to say that I want to put this on the air. Just, the people I talked to probably won't listen to the program. I didn't give them a business card, but the people all the way in the back, I interrupted them as I went by their table. And I said, may I interrupt you? I said, your son was the best behaved young person in the entire restaurant. Because he was so polite. And he seemed rather surprised, but very pleased that I said that.
They weren't surprised you interrupted their dinner?
Well, they were very surprised about that, too.
I think this place is special. I really honestly never knew about it until we started planning this trip. And I think it probably deserves to be better known. You Google it and you get the website. It's a straightforward website. And I think that, as I said, there's so many different things. You can come in here for a drink if you want it, just mm-hmm. a drink.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. And if you want to have some ham, you can have some ham.
Yeah, you have one of those wonderful legs of the Iberico upstairs on the bar.
Yeah,
which I've always wanted to have one of those in my kitchen, except I couldn't afford the ham. And so people do that? Do they come in just casually like that?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. People come in just for a drink, sort of early evening, maybe have some charcuterie, glass of wine, and then, of course, other people stay and have the full works.
Well, now, you, Leo, I want to know, I mean, because you were so happily ensconced at other places. I mean, what do you do here that really has you refreshed? You seem so happy.
Well, it's a new experience, and but most of the times you'll notice that usually nothing changes in life. You always work in a business where you really want to be, and this is what keeps you happy when you get your friends coming through the door, and you see them over and over and over again, and it's rewarding. And all you want to do is you just want to make sure that they also live happy every single time.
Especially if they pop in from the U.S. when you don't expect it.
Well, that's a nice surprise.
Now, see, the secret is Leo knew, he knew we were coming, because not only did the person who introduced us to him know, but he also went to our website to take a look. So when we walked in the door, it was wonderful to be recognized after all these years. I knew what to expect because I'd seen his picture on the web, but he must have seen ours as well. And this is just part of the whole hospitality business that Leonardo Hoja is about. And one of these days, I forecast there will be a restaurant called Leonardo's. And I hope, Leonardo, that you will let us know, and we will be one of the first media to come and cover it.
You'll be the first one to know.
And Rosie, we wish you every success. We know that your mentor, Nick, has gone back to New Zealand. So for those people who want to go to New Zealand, remind them of his first and last name so they can look him up.
Nicholas Watt.
Nicholas Watt. So yep. If you're going to New Zealand, find where Nicholas Watt is and you'll be sure to have a wonderful time. And in the meantime, we hope you'll keep in touch with us and let us know about all the adventures in your career.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, both of you, for joining
thank
us
you very much.
On the
thank
menu
you.
Today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's worth noting that the restaurant Aurelia is located in the same highly concentrated retail and restaurant area that's on the southern edge of Mayfair, just north of Piccadilly and just off Bond Street, which is of course where we found it, and so convenient. And you'll be sure to have a wonderful time if you go. And in the meantime, it's time for us to take a break before we come back and tell you about another wonderful place to go.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. You know, when I listen to these interviews, I can't sort of believe our luck in just having had this one fabulous meal after another.
I call it good planning.
Yeah, I guess so.
I call it good planning and getting good advice from the people who helped us to make all these arrangements to meet all these wonderful young people who are adventuring in the restaurant business. And our next port of call, Dego, probably counts as the most ambitious.
Well, you know, there are wine bars opening all over the place, all over the world, and particularly in London, and it was not too far a stretch to envision that one would be an Italian wine bar with exceptional food.
But the more remarkable thing, and we do mention this in the interview, but it's worth emphasizing it now, that a young couple, can't be more than 30 years old, came all the way from Italy. It's a town called Vicenza in the Veneto region of Italy, came all the way to London to establish a wine bar and restaurant. Talk about adventuring. It turns out that we stayed in Vicenza, their hometown, which is also the hometown of the great architect Palladio. And I was telling them about a place we had lunch. I said, perhaps you've heard of the Trattoria Zamboni, which has nothing to do with the ice repairing machine. And they said, oh yeah. He said, oh yes, we know it very well. And unfortunately, the chef was ill last year, so he had a tough time with the restaurant, but we were delighted to hear that Signor Zamboni is back in fine form again. And certainly, the couple running Dego is in fine form too, and
it's
here they
Dego.
Are. Dego. Oh, there you go.
It's a combination of degustazione and osteria.
Okay,
as you will
hear. I understand. Oh, and a quick hint, by the way, this place is easy to find, but hard to find. If you go via the street address on Great Portland Street, it's not there. It's around the corner from there at the other end of Portland House, but it's also one short block north of Oxford Circus. One of the main shopping streets of London. So it's an extraordinarily convenient place to go.
And is red hot.
red hot in more than one way,
oh, yes.
as you'll hear again.
We are happily in a very smart wine bar and restaurant, and it's called Dego. And you might think that's kind of an odd name, especially since the accent's on the last syllable. But we're going to be talking to Elisa Bedin and Massimo Mioli, who are partners in this venture. Elisa does front of the house, and Massimo does he's the chef partner. And we're going to start off by saying, what is it with this concept? I should point out that you both come from Italy, and everybody who works here is from Italy, and it's a combination of a popular concept of this wine bar, a popular meaning in London particularly now, and Italy and things Italian. So, Elisa, explain how you came to want to open a wine bar and bistro here.
Just thought that it was really challenging to open a new wine bar and restaurant here and explain to people how is the wine. We really care about high quality of wine. So we got the wine bar upstairs where people can try a wide range of wine by the glass with a lot of charcuterie and cheese, obviously from Italy.
And we are downstairs, and this is more full service restaurant, huh?
Yes. And downstairs is more like a fine dining restaurant with, as you see, a modern twist.
First, tell us, what is the name mean? It's a combination of two words.
Yeah, the combination is between degustazione and osteria, which means tasting, and old tavern where people used to drink wine in the 80s. And so degustazione and osteria, degusteria, they go with the accent.
And it's in a smart location. Where are we?
We are in Oxford Circus.
See, that's good.
Yeah, we are really central.
Uh-huh.
And really close to all the shop.
And now you, I'm not sure I fully understood this, but the decor is extremely interesting. And did you have a friend who did this decor?
Massimo and one of the partners design all the restaurant. And everything is coming from Italy, especially from Vicenza area. We got 3,000 of piece of leather coming from Arzignano, Vicenza.
And this looks like tiles.
Yes, yes, with
and
leather.
Put together, yeah. Like little square tiles and put together.
Yeah, we mix everything on the wall, so it's like a mosaic leather.
It looks like my kitchen, actually, which I did this to. And the dominant color is red. Now, why red?
Yeah, the red because is the wine. Wine is red.
And I understood meat is red, too.
Yes,
so you,
of course.
Is that you specialize in meat as
yes.
well as wine?
Meat and wine.
I said all your servers are also from Italy, so it's kind of a cultural adventure to come here, too. Yes, and you intend that to be so, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Londoners love Italian, don't they?
Yeah.
I sometimes think there aren't any servers left in Italy because they're all in London. No, Massimo. Tell us a little bit about the cuisine. Now, obviously, it's going to be Italian, but it's actually more complicated than that. You have your own personal style. I should point out that your family is in the restaurant business in Italy, and you came early into this, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's true. My family is running a restaurant in Italy, and I decided to try this new experience in London to open this wine bar and restaurant with an Italian kitchen, but with a different twist. I can say it's a new Italian way, because we have a lot of traditional dish in our menu, but we have also some kind of new dish.
Will you modernize it and personalize it
yeah.
and make it feel more just fresher and newer
yes.
and more contemporary?
Yeah, more contemporary.
You even use some Asian ingredients, which is surprised me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ginger.
Yeah, I use ginger as well because I have seen that the people here in London, they love the spicy things. And so I decided to use the ginger in some dishes, for example, in one main course and in one dessert as well. And I have seen that it's working because they have tried and a lot of customers told to us that, wow, it's a different twist. It's a new Italian twist.
I'm not sure you'd sell a bunch of that in Italy.
No, because in Italy we don't use a lot of ginger in our dishes.
Mm-mm.
No. It's a strange thing in Italy.
Well, given all this, what we're going to be following this interview with a light supper, right?
Yeah.
And what dishes are you going to have a sample, and why?
Yeah, I'm going to give you some sample. For example, if we are starting with the antipasti, the antipasti is the starter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a parmigiana di melanzane. That is a traditional dish in Italy. But that one is with a different twist.
It's an eggplant, melanzana.
Yeah, it's a plain
aubergine
parmigiana.
We need two languages to translate, three languages.
Because there is six slices of fried aubergine, with followed by six slices of buffalo mozzarella, with the tomato on the bottom and a basil oil on the top.
As opposed to usually, it's almost like a lasagna. With
yeah.
the layers and
yeah,
all
yeah.
everything all together.
Yeah, but, and this, I can say that also this one is really, probably is lighter than the other one, the classic one. It's lighter, I love it.
Well, I expect we're going to be tasting that one.
Yeah, you have to taste.
What else?
Well, we have between 8 and 9 starter, but okay, we spoke about the aubergine parmigiana, but another one that I love, for example, is the veal liver scallop, tropea red onions, and sweet corns. That also, that one is a different twist of our fegato alla veneziana.
Yeah, it's one of Peter's favorite things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't help but notice you have an ancient, I would say it's an antique meat grinder.
Yeah.
In the dining room, attached to the table, which reminds me of my grandmother's sausage making
yeah,
equipment.
We
what do you do with it?
We used that to to prepare the beef tartare on the floor in front of the customer, because you can show that
how fresh
is the meat that we are using with all the ingredients. So the customer can choose some of that ingredients. The customer can say, no, I don't want, for example, the peppers on my beef tartare, but it's just to show fresh, how fresh is the meat.
Now, you move from the antipasti to, of course, any Italian menu is going to have
pasta dishes
that you have.
Yeah.
Primi piatti
is the pasta dishes, of course. Oh, here we can find a traditional dish made in Vicenza, so from my city, that is a bigoli con ragù d'anatra, that is house-made bigoli with duck ragù.
That sounded really good.
Yeah, it's really good. That one is a really traditional. It's a really, really old dish from Italy, from Veneto region. But
one will point out, though, that Lisa pointed out, you're not loyal to just one section or one region of Italy. You go all over the country picking whatever you think is the best dishes want to offer.
Yeah, with the menu, I moved in a lot of different regions in Italy. For example, we have gnocchi di semolina gnocchi, with porcini, tomato sauce, and Castelmagno cheese. For example, that one is a properly dish from Piedmont. Also, for example, we have a special twist in the fettuccine with pomodorini, because the twist is that the tomatoes, the cherry tomato, is a confit cherry tomato. Uh-huh. It's not just a cherry tomato sauce with burrata cheese on the top and basil oil as well, like the aubergine parmigiana. But the burrata that we put on the top is the heart of burrata, that in Italy we call stracciatella. Stracciatella, yeah.
So, I mean, it's actually, in Italy, it's almost like two cheeses, right? So,
yeah, burrata, yeah.
Okay, now, you emphasize the meats.
Yeah.
For the second plate.
For the second plate, okay, we have, for example, if you're going to speak about the meat.
Well, you do have monkfish, so that's a seafood.
Yeah, the seafood, the monkfish, yeah.
There are several. You have branzino.
Branzino, yeah.
Old branzino. Merluzzo.
Yeah.
Very traditional and delicious fish.
Yeah.
But this is a much larger section, longer section. That's the meat?
Yes, of course. Here we can find, for example, the Fiorentina cut. That here is the T-bone stick. Yeah, we use the beef from Ireland.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
We use a lot of ingredients from England.
Okay, so but you do source some from Italy?
Yeah, especially the fish and the meat is coming from England.
Ah, yeah, well, they have great products here, too.
Obviously, the burrata is coming from Italy. Uh-huh. All the specific ingredients from Italy, they are coming from Italy.
And then you have lineup of dolci desserts. You must like desserts, huh?
Yeah, we love the desserts in Italy.
So, what's your favorite dessert here?
My favorite is the chocolate caramel meringue with ginger sauce.
Yes, but that sounds amazing.
Yeah. There is a twist, because I love to use some twist. There is a classic thing that is the Italian meringue, meringa l'italiana, with chocolate and caramel on the heart. But there is the surprise that is the ginger sauce. So the spicy things again with the sweet things.
That's interesting. Now, of course, we're down to some basics here, which is this wine list, which is half of the purpose of the establishment. Tell us how you go about, or how you... Peter says it's a fascinating wine list, a really fine wine list.
Yeah.
How did you approach setting this up?
So, I have to tell you something about the wine list, because I'm a bubble lover. Okay?
You're what?
A bubble lover.
Oh, a bubble
sparkling
lover.
Wine. And I bring here in London the Franciacorta wine
that
for me is one of the most important sparkling wine.
We're going to try that.
Yeah, of course you have to try. One of the most important sparkling wine that we have in Italy is from the Lombardy region, and it's a metodo classico, a classic method. It's like a champagne. Champagne method, I mean. And usually they use three different grapes, like Champagne, there is a Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and instead of Pinot Meunier, in Italy we use the Pinot Blanc, okay? We move from all the region, from Alto Adige region, Friuli Venezia, and...
So you have it organized by region?
By region.
Yes. As opposed to grapes?
Yeah. Obviously, the most important is my region, that is the Veneto region, which the red, we have one of the top wine, red wine, that is the Amarone. Amarone wine.
We went to Massey.
Yeah?
Yeah, but we went to a restaurant and had, what was it, with the risotto.
Risotto.
We had risotto with the
with the Amarone.
The liquid ingredient was Amarone.
Yeah, Amarone, yeah.
It was fabulous.
Yeah. It's now probably the risotto with Amarone, I think that is a traditional Italian dish.
Okay.
Yeah, because in Veneto, in a lot of restaurants, you can find the risotto with Amarone.
Well, I mean, I've never seen this whole thing with the drying of the grapes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it was a wonderful operation. But so you have all these.
Do you know they call Amarone?
No.
That one is a really interesting thing, because in the 70, one producer of Valpolicella, usually they produce Valpolicella and Ricciotto della Valpolicella, that is the sweet wine. It's a really important Ricciotto della Valpolicella. But they made a mistake. In that year, the Ricciotto della Valpolicella was bitter.
Oh, nice.
So they call it, but it was really nice, so they call it Amarone. Amarone means amaro, is bitter.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that.
With a mistake, they produced the Amarone. So now there is Valpolicella, Amarone, and the Ricciotto della Valpolicella.
Of course, Peter likes the fact that you say that there's a limited number of French wines, but you have them buried in the back.
Yeah, in the back there is a small selection, because also I love French wine, in particular the champagne.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the list, you can find a small selection of white and red. It's a really small selection here. But at the beginning, close to the Franciacorta sparkling wine, you can find a great champagne list with all the different regions from Champagne, with a lot of small producers, but with a great, great, great wine.
Well, no wonder it's celebratory and fun here, as one review I read said, because everything's bubbly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to moving on to the tasting portion of this.
You have now there is a surprise, I hope so.
Okay. And I guess we should, we'll list your web address so that people can actually get all the little details about when you're open and so forth, and how to make reservations or whatever.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a delight meeting both of you.
Our pleasure.
Our pleasure.
And so move on from here and taste everything.
Okay, let's go.
Grazie mille.
Prego. No. Yeah.
Would you just listen to those guys prattling on in Italiano and swearing at me because I just dropped the microphone.
Again.
I think I actually banged it twice, but it's a solidly built microphone because it's obviously still holding up. Anyway, that's all for this week. London Italian. We'll have to wait for London for us to go back again next year and see what else we can find along the same theme or another exciting theme. We'll have another category of London restaurants for you next week. Same time, same place. So please be sure to join us then. And in the meantime,
bye-bye.